All right, listeners, here we are on the Love, Sweat, and Tears podcast takeover. Marty takes the mic, and I'm here today. This is Marty, by the way, Marty Silverman. I'm here today with a good friend and a brilliant colleague, the ever delightful and smart Dr. Billy Snow. And Billy is here visiting with us from beautiful Dallas, Texas. And, Billy is somebody that, if you don't know, you need to know, because Billy is somebody who spends a ton of time working with schools and leaders to create these incredible, transformational, guaranteed transformation, right, Billy?
Yes,
Yes.
sir.
Guaranteed transformational situations where schools can improve. And so I want to get right into it with the title today being From Failing to Flourishing, how everyday behavior, or what are some everyday behaviors that transform schools? So Billy, if you could just give us a real quick for anybody that might not know you, just a real quick let us know who you are, and then let's get into the conversation.
Sure. Good morning, Martin. And thank you for calling me delightful. I think that's the first time I've been called delightful in a long time. I'm Billy. Thank you for the great introduction. Basically have spent my career as an elementary teacher and then moved into the principalship, principal of two Title I schools that we turned around and accomplished some amazing things. From there, became an area superintendent over 12 Title I schools in Mansfield, Texas, which is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, before going to Shreveport, Louisiana. And in the time in Shreveport, Louisiana, led the transformation zone out of failing status, which was 12 schools spanning K through 12. Just an amazing work that probably was the most rewarding work of my entire career, before coming back to the Dallas area, to be Chief of Transformation and Innovation in Dallas ISD. That job was really about creating new innovative places for students or best fit schools. And then finished out as a superintendent before starting my own consulting. Started Transformation Leaders Network back in 2019 and have worked with around 70 schools since 2019. And that goes right along with the guarantees you talked about. Every single one of the schools that have partnered with us for 2 years has gone from D and F rated schools to A, B, and C. And so we're really proud of that 100% kind of success. Proud for the kids and the teachers and the principals who have worked with us to make it happen.
You know, that is just incredible because there are so few things in life that are guarantees. And I love the fact that you are willing to put your neck out and say, I guarantee that if you follow some, grounded practices, that you'll be able to transform your school into something better than it is right now. And so let's just dive right into that. So when you think about what the great leaders of the schools that you work with, what some of the particular behaviors that the leaders are able to, become themselves and implement with their staffs, what are some of the just foundational practices that people need to have and use in order to transform their school?
Absolutely. So I really kind of focus on four big rocks is what I refer to them as. One of them is having a positive, powerful culture and climate. There are things involved in the establishment of culture and climate, which are about establishing trust, making sure that you listen and create autonomy within the workplace, having systems and structures for climate and culture, where you actually can feel it when you walk in the door. Like you see people greeting kids at the door with handshakes, high fives, or hugs. You feel the positivity, and there's some certain key practices that go along with establishing climate and culture. Then moving on to instructional pedagogy and coaching. So what are the key practices that move student achievement, and what do leaders need to do around observing and providing face-to-face coaching? It's not about evaluations. It shouldn't be about an evaluation document. It should be about regular coaching happening in schools. The third one is the PLC and data meeting process. I've worked with a lot of schools that PLCs are honestly a waste of time, and they waste teachers' time. And so one of the things that I think a lot of the schools that I work with experience the most success around is establishing good PLC processes and data, diving into data and what we do about data, making those processes effective and efficient. And then finally, the fourth one is establishing systems of support. And sometimes that might be a push-in intervention period that happens during the day so you can stop pulling out from core instruction. Sometimes it might also be the SEL work and the restorative practice work that happens within the campus. But it's that last layer really is what are the extra supports and interventions that we provide. And if schools can get really in line with having effective systems for and structures and processes for all four of those areas, they tend to make amazing growth.
You know, in listening to you talk about those, you talk about those being the big rocks, right? Those are all huge movers for a school, to go on the road from being low performing to better performing, and then ultimately high performing, and having to look at the overwhelming, just like getting all that done at one time is overwhelming. So how would you break down some of those processes, some of those big rocks into like the sand, the small micro particles that get people moving?
Yeah, absolutely. We've all heard that saying, culture eats strategy for breakfast. If you do not really establish a positive climate and culture first, then the likelihood that you're able to do some of the other things, some of the other big rocks is less. And so one of the things I always start with is really a needs assessment conversation with principals and really find out where they currently are with each one of those big rocks and really start with climate and culture. An example of that would be a recent needs assessment that I did last year that showed they didn't have the things in place like common norms across the whole building. They didn't have a good first 2 weeks of school induction plan. They didn't have common expectations for greeting students at the door. And so we started there, and we started there with our PD. We did kind of a summer boot camp professional learning with the campus and really focused heavily on what everyone would agree to establish a good first 2 weeks of school and beyond. I like to think of it as teach, model, practice, reinforce. There are about 50 things that need to be taught at the beginning of the school year, practiced, modeled, and then reinforced. And it's interesting because a lot of schools, they fall off on the reinforcement. They don't have tied into their token economy, or they don't tie it into their PBIS. And so when it comes to about Shocktober, when things start to fall apart, your climate and culture is falling right back. And so one of the things that we build in to the climate and culture work is, what does your first 2 weeks of school look like? What are the common practices that we're going to agree to do? And such as, the greetings at the door and calling everyone by name and standing and talking in complete sentences, those kind of things. How do those actually get taught, modeled, practiced, and reinforced over the first 2 weeks, but also throughout the year? And if you skip the climate and culture piece, then the other pieces become so much harder. But if you master the climate and culture pieces, and teachers notice, oh, wow, we're not having as many discipline issues as we had last year. This is the smoothest first beginning of the year we've ever had. Then they're more willing to do, and you've built political capital with them to be able to actually say, you know what, we're going to tweak how we do coaching, or we're going to tweak how we do our PLCs and data meetings. Without that political capital that comes with climate and culture development, the other rocks move slower. They become actually boulders to move instead of smaller rocks that you can move with a good culture.
I love hearing that, because you've hit on something that I think is important. When you are involved as a leader or a teacher in a school that has struggled, so if you've experienced a lot of failure, a lot of negative feedback, not only just negative feedback, but like negative outcomes from things, because, I believe that most people, like a great majority of the people, probably nearly 100% of the people that work at these schools, they're not like going to work trying to make their school an F, right? They're going with the attitude that they want their school to be successful. And so, they have the intention, but not maybe the intentionality, if that makes sense to you. That's kind of what I see. But it's scary to think I'm in this hole that is, just exists. And to get out of it, what I prefer to do is to hang on to practices that at least I am comfortable with, even though I may know that they're not, that they haven't, given me the results.
For sure, for sure.
So how does a teacher create, because a leader does it for the staff and the staff do it for the children. How do you create the psychological safety that people need in order to feel comfortable making a leap?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing that creates safety is when a leader actually creates that environment where things are being done with the staff rather than to the staff. And so a lot of the work that we will do around culture and climate, for example, is figuring out, what is working, what is not working, what direction do we want to go, and then layering and building your professional learning and coaching around it. So then the example I gave about changing the climate and culture, we started in Shreveport, for example, by creating this space for all teachers and principals to participate in almost like a teacher boot camp where they actually learned and got to create their own systems. What are our common expectations? What are 10 common expectations? Things like we greet people by name. We talk in complete sentences and agree and disagree respectfully. We say thank you within 3 seconds of receiving something or the item will be taken back, kind of based on the work of Ron Clark, really, on the Essential 55. But talking about those things we wanted to see and then asking teachers questions like, what would we have to do to see all these things on campus? And guiding them through that process. What would we have to do to teach these things? What would we have to do to model these things? What does practice and role play of these things look like? And then how do we tie these things into our PBIS and token economies to get them to create the whole process themselves? You don't just give people a scripted curriculum for the first 2 weeks of school. You don't just tell them what's going to happen. You build it with them. So I think when you build things with them, that creates safety. Another thing that really helps is twisting how we coach and observe people to being more about coaching and feedback than evaluation. So if I say that my first 2 weeks of school is going to look like this, then we're going to be walking heavily those first 2 weeks of school to collect data and provide coaching. None of it's going to go on an evaluation. None of it's going to go on a document. It's going to go, on a coaching script so that we can have conversations about what it actually looks like. Then when we move into instruction, they're ready for it because they've already had a good first 2 to 3 weeks of school. They've created the system. They've received feedback. And so then keeping that coaching happening during looking for instruction, looking at intervention practices, it creates that psychological safety. My wife's a good example. She hates to get a email form with checkboxes for an evaluation or a walkthrough. She likes being coached face to face. And so a lot of times I will talk to principals about move away from 10 walks a week on a form that is just a checkbox and move into face-to-face coaching, even if you're scared of it. Because the relationship and the trust develops from face-to-face conversation, not by an email. So that also creates that psychological safety. Other things that, real quickly that help, you've got to celebrate the wins. So all throughout the year, celebrate attendance, celebrate changes in your discipline referral rate, celebrate your benchmark scores, celebrate the implementation of practices. Tell stories about what differences are being made with actual children and use their names and talk about the differences being made. And then by the time that you are finishing year one of turnaround and transformation, you have a whole campus that feel trust, they feel trusted, and they feel respected, and therefore they're safe to actually try new things and to go deeper with their instruction. That's kind of been what I've seen work is just helping them to be part of the system in creation and the creation of it and implementation of it, and keeping that implementation cycle of coaching happening on a regular basis.
Billy, so many of the things you just said resonate with me, but I wanted to go on to one that really hit me. So you talked about how your wife, who's a arts teacher, correct? She teaches the arts, and she prefers face-to-face coaching as opposed to a checklist, getting a checkbox form in the email. And something that I observed as a principal myself was that once we moved from coaching to compliance, like you have to have 10 walkthroughs a week, you have to have 20 walkthroughs a week, the focus then moves away from coaching and it moves to compliance, because you start thinking as a leader, I have to get 20 done, I have to get 10 done, I have to get 5 done in a certain amount of time. And I think that subtly, and maybe not subtly, changes the way that the leader feels about that whole process of coaching and improvement. Mm-hmm. You've worked as a teacher, a principal, an assistant superintendent, a superintendent. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about coming from the middle. So coming from a principal role, how do we help advocate for something like a system of coaching as opposed to a system of compliance?
Yeah. So, if I could write a book targeted to central office about how not to mess up schools, that would be super helpful. Because all in my work all across the country, I've seen that sometimes well-meaning people who are trying to produce academic gains implement systems that actually get in the way of progress. And one of those systems is when you tell people you have to do a certain number of walks a week, and on this form that's checkboxes, my wife, when she sees empty boxes, she thinks they're all the things that she has not done. She interprets the boxes a certain way. And those walk forms are not helpful. I don't think there's even any data on evaluations actually helping teachers get better, but there is data around coaching in a variety of fields. You could look at athletics and how coaches work there. You could look at the coaching and the walk systems that happen in hospitals. You can look at what should be happening in education and the schools that use coaching. I tend to use Get Better Faster Coaching by Paul Bamrick Santoyo. And you can see that those coaching relationships and the coaching actually produces change. You don't see that same connection in a walk form. So as a principal, one of the things I always encourage principals to do is to actually use their voice. Principals can get a little scared of, just like teachers do, scared of their evaluations, scared of you know, any kind of, what do they say? Not retribution probably isn't the right word, but people have this idea in their mind that if they talk out, if they speak out, that some negative consequence is going to happen. But what I try to do is I get the principals practicing coaching on their campus and get them to be successful with face-to-face coaching so that then they can speak from a place of experience. It's one thing to just be in your seat as a principal and be like, I don't like walkthroughs. They're not helpful. Or I don't like having to do 10. But if we can get you to be really good at coaching as a part of your practice and a part of your growth, you become a successful practitioner of coaching, and you can speak from a position of, okay, here's what I've noticed, central office people. Here's what I've noticed. I've noticed that I have all this data about instructional practices improving tied to my cycle of coaching. I don't have data about cycles of improvement being happening connected to sending walks and forms in an email, but I can show you this. Would it be possible that we move to this kind of structure? And I'll tell you a real example of how this actually happened. I was working in a district last year where we implemented coaching in all face-to-face coaching in all of the schools, all 32 elementary schools. And we did a series of professional learning all year. Because we did the system focused on coaching all year, and we did, you know, scripting, we did videotape with sort of examples of coaching, and then took them through that practice all year, every single one of the schools went up an academic level. Even if I wasn't coaching them beyond that, I had 5 other ones that I was that also moved up more, but they all moved up an academic level in that state on the color rankings is how they leveled them or how they rank them. And then the next year, the district actually moved away from requiring the email walkthroughs and moved into looking at or at telling them that this is what we're trying to get to is face-to-face coaching. We're seeing the data, we're seeing it's working. So now you do not have to do the email checkbox forms. You can have evidence of your face-to-face coaching. And that came as synergy from a whole group that was involved in the process and them being able to show the data and talk about that that was the way that they wanted to go. And then the district seeing the data that lined up to it. And that's part of combining your voice, I guess, with the data so that you can speak from experience and speak from a good practical application level.
That is such a brilliant example, and I love hearing it because that is the kind of movement that we're really looking for. We're not looking to, you know, get better at getting 10 check forms done. We're looking at getting teachers to teach better and to do better. So I love that example. Billy, okay, so I am, and this is not really true because I'm an old retired guy, but I'm a principal of a school that has been struggling, and I've newly been appointed to this school. And you and I encounter each other, and I need a pep talk. Can you give me a 1-minute pep talk to get me ready for the kind of mindset that I'm going to need to have to get ready for this year?
Wow. That's a good question. And I think it's a good question. It's a deep question because the work that we do requires your heart and your mind to be engaged at the same time. I know when I do PD and coaching, I understand that people need their mind to be touched with practical application and strategies, and they need their heart to be touched and re-engaged with why they do this work. And a lot of people don't understand how those two go together. So if I was giving you a pep talk about the work we're going to do for this upcoming year, I would be like, hey man, I want you to tell me right now, what are the things that are going well at your campus? What are the things that you would change in a minute if you could snap your fingers, and where you want to be at the end of the year? Because I can't give you a pep talk unless I know that about you. And so I'd start there. And then it'd be like, okay, this is based on what you've told me, here are the things that we're going to have to engage in. We're going to have to take a look at your systems and structures and processes together. We're going to have to, we're going to narrow it down to a few key things. We're going to work on your climate and culture practices. We're going to work on some instructional practices, but not 100. We're going to pick 3 to 5 that are going to really, you're going to get great at, your teachers are going to get great at. And then we're going to work on a plan. And that implementation plan is going to be something that you continually cycle back to so that you will be successful by the end of the year. If you are able to identify what you want to do, where you want to be, and create a implementation plan that you keep coming back to every month, I guarantee you that you will get the results that you want. So are you ready? Are you ready for that journey? And every time they're like, yeah, I want to do this, right? And I think that's what you would say also is, yeah, I want to have a succinct plan that enables me to go from A to Z, even when other things get in the way, because other things are going to get in the way. And that you are going to be able to keep coming back to the plan that we created and be able to be successful by the end of the year.
No, for sure. You know, I was about to yell out, yes, I'm ready to go. Just from you saying that, you inspired me, Billy. What I want to kind of close this with, first of all, encouraging listeners to, be in contact with you, and also to, of course, responsive learning provides tons of courses and support in transformation and building culture and a lot of the things that you're talking about. But I want to make sure that we leave with just the understanding that what I got from our conversation is that you tend to build from strength. And you know, and I think probably because it aligns with my philosophy is you can't build from weakness. You can build weakness, you know, you can build up weaknesses, but you have to build on strengths. And what I really appreciated in your pep talk was that you started with what is working well, because we often, it's our tendency as school leaders and probably human beings to look at the deficits first. But it's so hard to build from deficit. It's a lot, it's a lot more effective to build from strength. So I appreciate
For
that.
sure.
So, just as kind of a final summing up, if I'm listening to you and I want to take action now, right? I want to take action. What should I do? What should I do if I want to take action?
Awesome. Well, if I like to start with a transformation call to really talk about your transformation journey. So if you are interested, it's the email address is TLN for Transformation Leaders Network for education at gmail.com. That's TLN for education at gmail.com. And from that, what I usually do or what I encourage people to do is to think about and dream where you want to be and where you are currently and what might be getting in the way and be ready to be open to doing some things that really work. And so I guess the first step is really just to reach out. I always encourage principals to try to get a coach, whether it's me or whether it is someone else. It is okay to need help, and it is actually pretty awesome to go seek and get coaching. When I was doing the school transformation work in Shreveport, I got a coach for a while because the work was intense. The work was different than some of the other work I'd done. There were political nuances in the city and in the system that I had to navigate that I'd never had before. And so get a coach. And if it's me, that's great. And reach out through TLN for education at gmail.com and be ready to spend some time digging into the important things. Be ready to be challenged. I have a lot of people tell me that they learn more through the coaching and through the work of implementation than they had the whole rest of their career. And so be ready to be challenged, be ready to be held accountable. Be ready when I follow up with your action steps and you haven't done them. Be ready for me to get after you for a minute and get you back on track, but more like a critical friend and more like an actual coach, like a football coach. And not your boss, not your evaluator, but a critical friend and reach out.
Awesome. We all definitely need that. Educational leadership can sometimes be lonely. I know that sounds cliche, but often we are the only one of us in our setting. There are a lot of teachers, there's a lot of support staff, and there's usually only one of us. So it is important to find somebody to do that. Billy, thank you
Absolutely.
so much for spending time with me today. I enjoyed our pre-conversation that was probably longer than this conversation. As always, it's great to see you, and I look forward to staying connected.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.